puck has been dropped, and we've got more news trickling out. It's 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. Our good friend Mike Johnson is going to join us in a little bit. He'll have something to say about this Kyle Connor extension. $96 million and three quarters of the Big Four have now been signed.
Well, we shouldn't be surprised about the Connor deal. It was, and remember when Mark Chipman was on with us, 3 weeks ago, there was absolute calmness in his voice when he said, yeah, this is not going to be a problem. And so, you know, the Jets got exactly what they wanted, which was term. And Kyle Connor got his money, gets a $5 million raise starting next year. And you know, he'll be a cornerstone, I assume, now when you sign an 8-year deal for the rest of his career in Winnipeg, which is when everybody talks about how difficult it is to sign players to play in Canada, the challenge of small markets, this is another real bow in the complimentary side for Kevin Cheveldayoff, for the Jets. You know, Hellebuck's long-term, Scheifele's long-term, now Connor's long-term, Morrissey's long-term. They've done a good job of keeping that group together.
Well, it's been a heck of a couple of years for Winnipeg, from the signings and extensions of the Scheifele's and the Hellebuck's to the President's Trophy to now being able to retain Kyle Connor in a really aggressive market.
You know, there is a watershed moment for the Jets, and it really began 3 years ago when they hired Rick Bonus, and Kyle Connor was one of those guys that previous spring that had called for a change in culture, and they brought Bonus in, and there became a change in culture, and Scott Arneil was part of that culture, and he's carried it on in his position as the head coach, and the players have backed it up. This is a really tight-knit unit of players. They love playing in Winnipeg. They love the Jets. And the only thing missing now is a long run in the Stanley Cup playoffs, Darren. And you have to wonder if it can come and when it will come.
But it just feels different than the Blake Wheeler, Patrick Laine era.
Quote unquote, we need a change of culture. Mm-hmm. That's, and it was, you know, there were, let's face it, there were different sects in the dressing room. And now this is a dressing room of one. And you can look at the type of players that they have there, the guys that want to be in Winnipeg. You know, Nino Niederreiter wants to be in Winnipeg. Vladdy Namestnikov wants to be there. This is a team that has given players an opportunity to grow. And as far as the players go, Adam Lowry is one of those guys that has become such a linchpin as the captain now. There are so many positives, but I can tell you right now, as happy as people in Edmonton are about signing Connor McDavid, I think that there's even more joy in Winnipeg these days with what's gone on and certainly the signing of Kyle Lowry. By the way, Lowry needs a new contract as well. He's in the last year of his deal, and he's injured right now, but let's call a spade a shovel. We're going to be hearing about the Adam Lowry contract extension pretty soon, too, I believe.
Well, I haven't heard anything about no provincial tax being an influence
Did you see Roberto Luongo's tweet about that?
I did appreciate that. So, get out in front of it, right?
Oh, sure. You know, and by the way, speaking of Edmonton, Matthias Ekholm signs for 3 more years in Alberta. It's a 3-year deal that the first 2 years coincide with Connor McDavid's will to win. And so I think it's a great move. It's only $4 million a year. And in many ways,
$4 million for a guy that'll be in his back half of the 30s. So,
you know, just like Brad Marchand. Just like Brad Marchand's on the back half, too. I think if, and this is a big caveat, if Ekholm stays healthy, he's a factor. And he's, by the way, he has made Evan Bouchard a better player. And so that's a big part of this. And so Ekholm and the trade that Kenny Holland made with Nashville to get Ekholm there really was a key moment for this organization. And so, but that's a good move for the Oilers. And, you know, I dare I say that when somebody signs for only $4 million in Edmonton, are we now talking about the Connor McDavid influence? No,
that's the Connor McDavid gap, like from yeah, 12 right. and a half to 17. There's Matthias Ekholm.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I know it's
like it fits perfectly, doesn't it?
It does. And now you have to wonder who else is going to sign in the next couple of years in order to in this window that McDavid has created.
That's your extra player to be able to add to your lineup, an important player to add to your lineup that you wouldn't have been able to necessarily afford. By taking less money. So in the end,
but here's
Kirill Kaprizov become irrelevant? Does that $17 million a year become a non-influencer at the end of the day?
No, there will be players that will use the Kaprizov comparables. There will be. You know,
because Kyle Connor falls right in line with the Mitch Marner contract and the Leon Draisaitl contract. Like they all... they're perfect in line compared to what Kaprizov did.
Yes, they do. I'm not sure that, you know, I think Kyle Connor did really well to get $12 million. I think that's the top end of what he deserved. And that's not the top end of what Connor McDavid deserved. So I'm not sure that those are comparisons that we can make.
McDavid and Kaprizov are both tossed out. You toss out your highs and your lows, and everybody else falls in the middle.
It's like gymnastics judging, right?
Yes.
You throw out the top one and the bottom one, and we'll do the middle.
Perfect.
Yeah.
in a way.
I think we should launch a 100% gymnastics podcast, too. What do you think?
I want to see you do a back handspring.
You have never seen me do a back handspring, and you never will.
How about imagine this for a thought? John Shannon on the rings doing the Iron Cross, just shaking.
My shoulders should pop out, both of them.
No, which one of us could just hang there?
I don't mind the close-up, but the problem would be if you zoomed out, you'd see the two guys holding my legs.
Mike Johnson.
By the way, last night, what did you think of last night?
I thought it was Seelovs going in and posting a shout-out.
What a story.
Really cool story. The Florida Panthers scored three greasy goals against the Chicago Blackhawks to score two beauties. And who wins? Well, the defending champions scoring the greasy goals. And tell you what, Colorado, they allowed 8 opening night a year ago, and Georgiev never recovered. A much better start this time around.
And congratulations to Nathan MacKinnon, who is now the leading scorer in the history of the Colorado Avalanche, passing his boss.
And LA was so good at home last year.
Yeah, I know. We've talked a lot, and everybody's doing their prognostications. My concern in the Pacific Division is LA. I don't, and by the way, remember,
they were a bad challenge from beating the Oilers and I know. Skating into the second round.
I know. And remember the first half of the season last year, no Drew Doughty, right?
Yeah.
So, I have concerns about the Kings. I really do.
After just one game.
Well, after 6 weeks, you know.
Okay.
I don't wish that ill on a friend of mine. I'm as you know, I'm a big Kenny Holland.
It hurts you. It hurts you.
It does. It hurts. It hurts when my friends don't.
Yeah, you got to be like me. You got to come into this thing with no feelings.
Cold, callous bastard that you are.
Yeah.
Callous. Cold and callous.
Just look at it from 30,000 feet. I don't have time for friends.
Duly noted.
Mike Johnson's joined the waiting room. We'll get to him next on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. Okay, let's play this game. We just connected with MJ, Mike Johnson, and in the background, we know he's in a hotel. John, can you name the hotel? The just the brand. Like,
sure, it's a Sheraton hotel. It's a Sheraton hotel.
I can see the little lock there. You got the do not disturb sign. Must be out in front of the door. So that's good.
Front of the door. And this is not my pattern of choice for my interior decorating. So yes, guilty as charged. 100%. 100%.
Fun watching hockey last night?
Yeah, I mean, opening day is great. I mean, I think we've all been around the game for a couple of years now. I think it's great on two fronts. One, that it's not preseason anymore. I think we all really love preseason, even when good players are playing, because it just is not real anymore. It's so far removed from what a regular game is like.
Well, when you consider, when you consider that the four biggest events of the preseason were the Marc-Andre Fleury event in Pittsburgh, mm-hmm. not real, mm-hmm. with all due respect, and then three nights of brouhahas.
That was one in Ottawa, a couple in Tampa and Florida, and that was most important. That's what we took out of the preseason. So I think that being over with, and every now and then in regular season, I get these sort of waves of nostalgia or emotion or excitement, and brings me back to when I played, and opening night is one of them, because I loved the idea, and I played on some not great teams. But for that day, like, you legitimately felt that maybe this is the year. Like, maybe this is the year we do something we're not supposed to do. Maybe we make the playoffs. Maybe I score 20. Maybe I'm on the power play. Maybe I'm in the NHL. Whatever it is, everyone sort of has a different standard of what would constitute a surprisingly good year. But there is a sort of a joy in having that there. Until the reality that's not going to happen this year sets in after like 7, 8, 9 games. But for the first little bit, it feels like anything is possible. And that's a cool place to be.
Edmonton goes to back-to-back Stanley Cup final appearances. And then there's all this question mark this summer that Oilers fans must feel great about where their team is right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even if nothing that happened this week happened, the Oilers were going to be a cup favorite this year. Like, this year has not really changed. They were always going to be really good. McDavid was always going to play there. But the fact of the matter is, what Connor McDavid did this week, I mean, it knocked me out of my chair when I read it. I was like, is this real? This can't be real. To give up what would be the single greatest hometown discount in the history of the salary cap era ever. I mean, he gave up $7 or $8 million. Even on a 2-year deal, and in an effort to better position himself and his team to win, that is a degree of commitment to winning and to the organization that you can't ask anybody else to do, but he did. Obviously, Oilers fans would love it. They now have 3 years where that group's together. They turn around and sign Jake Walman, essentially for the same contract that McDavid just saved you. The fact that mm-hmm. Walman's on the team, like, what does this contract give you, McDavid? Mm-hmm. It gives you Jake Walman. It gives you a top four defenseman on your team that you would not have been able to afford had McDavid got the 19 and a half that he probably deserves. So,
and they added an Ekholm. He gets contract.
Ekholm goes today. So they're all sort of locked in. But Darren, it's not done, because while it's great that they have the core together and sort of Hyman and McDavid and Ekholm and Bouchard, they all sort of expire in 3 or 4 years. They need better players. They can't just bring back the guys they have. They need other good players to make this team.
Where?
The Stanley Cup. No, well, I think goal is the first answer for sure. Hard to get good goalies, and there's always a risk involved in, like, if you think you're getting one, how good they actually going to be. But I think the more obvious and easier thing to get is scoring wingers. They need middle six scoring wingers. I know Zach Hyman will come back. But if you're putting Drysdale and McDavid together with Trent Frederick, who else is going to score? Like, I mean, like, the second line, third line, they need, Florida's shown us the depth down the lineup. Having third lines that could contribute is so important, even with star power up top. And I think that would be an easier target to figure out than goaltending. But yeah, goaltending, I suppose. But certainly this year, scoring wingers, they need like more than one.
And that was a place that Vegas ID'd, and they wanted more offense from the wing, and they went out and brought in Mitch Marner. But it's interesting that you go that path with Edmonton.
Well, I mean, they have, if you put Drysdale in the middle and you let Nugent Hopkins play in the middle, they have three really good centermen, mm-hmm. but you got to surround those guys with six scoring wingers, or at least maybe three or four. And they have Hyman as one. Who else is two if those guys play down the middle? So, now,
I think you've hit the nail on the head there. I think you're going to have to see one of Ryan Nugent Hopkins or Leon Draisaitl play the wing. I really do. And to me, it wouldn't be Draisaitl. I think this team is, for a regular season, because I think there's a giant difference between the regular season and the playoffs, you're better off with Draisaitl running his own line than you are playing with Connor McDavid.
Of course. I mean, you love the option because they're unstoppable together, but if you can stop them somehow, you're probably going to have a good chance of winning the game. So the only thing they say, though, John, is that it's easier to get wingers than it is centermen, right? So if you could have Nuge on the set, like, think about when it was Barkov and Bennett and Lundell, and everyone's copycatting depth. If it's McDavid, Draisaitl, Nugent Hopkins, you know, go find your Lusterainen. Go find that guy. Not so easy to do, but find a guy like that. So yeah, it's,
well, they're hoping Savoie can put some pucks in the net, but I know young and right.
Right. Well, and it's okay to hope that, and he may be that. And I think if you played him with McDavid, he would score 25 goals because he's Connor McDavid, not because he's Savoie. So it's more about the guys they're playing with. And I know Leon White likes playing with Podkolzin. Really, really likes playing with him as a winger, and Podkolzin might get 20, but I guess if you're thinking about winning a cup in the playoffs against the other best teams in the league, you know, is you know, like Howard and Savoie, like, are these guys going to be able to do it in that moment when that's what Edmonton will need?
They got a lot of learning to do, those two guys. A lot of learning.
But what about opportunity, though, John? I mean, I came out of college and, like, jumped into the NHL, but I didn't jump on a Stanley Cup contender. But the fact of the matter is, you're on one, and they need what you can do. And they don't really have someone to replace you. That's the difference. Like, it's one thing you have an opportunity, but there's also someone waiting in the wing saying, if you can't do it, like, we're going a different direction. They don't have a lot of other great options.
So where are you on Toronto?
I am a little concerned. I think what the Leafs are trying to do, and I always worry about this, and you guys can chime in, like, designing a team to beat a specific team. Like, it feels like they're, like, focusing on Florida as the team that they need to be able to figure out how to beat. And I get it. Florida's been there 3 years in a row. They might make it 4 years in a row. But, you know, getting bigger, that's good. Getting slower, which they've done, it's not as good. And so I'm, you know, if Austin Matthews is healthy, and from all reports he is, I expect him to sort of reestablish himself into a top five player in the league. Like, it's going to be Matthews, McDavid, McKinnon, Draisaitl. Like, I think those are the big four forwards if he's healthy. And he's got to be that, I think, for Toronto to be good. But I just think, you know, Dakota Joshua, Nick Waugh, Michelli, they're all good players. They can all play on good teams in the NHL. But you put them all together, and I don't know how fast they are. They can look slow at times, and that's never what you want to win. The league's going faster, and the teams are getting faster, and then you're going a bit slower. I do worry about their regular season comfort, and I think they're going to make the playoffs, but it just won't feel as comfortable. Now, when they get to the playoffs, maybe those big guys help and they get better, but they're going to be good. I don't think they'll be as good or as comfortable as the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years where they sort of were off and running and just thinking about the playoffs.
Lots of pressure on Matthew Nyes.
Yeah, and he is, John, you've been around, like, Derek, he is, like, everywhere in Toronto. Campaigns, I got buses with his picture. I'm riding a subway train with his picture on the side of it. He's not supposed to be Mitch, because he's not. But he's supposed to fill that void in a pretty significant way. My concern for Matthew Nyes, I think everyone knows he's a really good player. If you look at Matthew Nyes' life playing hockey, I'm talking back to, like, the USHL. He's never been a massive scorer. Even in college at Minnesota, he played with Logan Cooley, who was, like, the best player in college. He had 20 goals and 20 assists. He didn't have 40 goals like Kyle Connor did in Michigan. They get 20, which is good, but it's not. He's never been incredible. The story I always say is him and Josh Doan played growing up together, the same team in Arizona. And everyone watched those games and say, oh, my God, Matthew Nyes is the best player on the ice. He's better than anyone else. But then at the end of the year, when you look at the score sheet, Josh Doan would have 100 points and Matthew Nyes would have 70. And so, you know, there are different ways to be a good player. But if it's just about point production, you're talking about Matthew Nyes. I just don't know how much more he has in him than what he did last year. I don't know if like 30, 30, 60 would be a monster year. And I don't know how much more he has than that. Hopefully he has more if you're a Leaf fan, but that is sort of my question. He already exceeded what I thought he could do in the NHL last year. I don't know if he can do it again.
So, to be the devil's advocate about the Maple Leafs, what does it say when you pick up two players on waivers 2 days before the season starts?
Well, I mean, I think one is completely an anomaly, and that's the Joseph Woll situation. You know, he's away for personal reasons. I think it tells you that the uncertainty of that timeline, because if they knew it was going to be a week or something, they'd ride Reimer or Hildeby or anybody, right? And then they could sort it out. I think it tells you they're not sure, and they don't know, do they need a third goalie for the minors? Do they need a third goalie and let Hildeby play in the minors? So the Caden Primo one is explainable, although Caden Primo has a hard time in the NHL historically.
Yeah.
He's great in the minors and he's great in college. Like, he can't lose in the minors. And I've seen him in Montreal for 3-4 years. And every time he plays, it's like, he just doesn't look confident. So we'll see what happens there. The Sammy Blais one. Yeah. I mean, I guess it tells you they're not sure about their lineup still. And they want, what does Sammy Blais do? Well, I guess he has some familiarity with Craig Berube, but what does he do different than the guys they have? He's a bit younger. He's a bit faster. He's a bit faster.
Okay.
Because up and down the lineup, they're not. Yeah. And like, he's not there to score. Like, he's not going to go play in a scoring role. I think he's shown that he's probably not that at an NHL team or a good one, but you know, whether it's Kelly Yarncroak or Nick Robertson or Easton Cowan or whoever those guys might be, you know, those guys are trying to establish themselves, but they don't, I think they like the idea of a guy who skates real fast and hits real hard and is sort of a straight line guy the coaches knows and trusts, which is why Easton Cowan might not make the opening night roster. And he might not even play in the NHL the entire time for October, because if you have a top prospect like him, you want him in the press box? Absolutely not. Not when you can bring him up and down anytime you want. So either he's playing and you don't even want him really on a fourth line. Like, not like playing 8 minutes and chipping it out and chipping in, and like, that's not what he's going to be if he's going to help you long term. So you wonder if that's also a move to say, okay, we can send him down. Now we have Sammy Blais as the 13th guy, and then we can pop, like, that just gives him more flexibility related to count.
With Marner gone, who do the fans and the media focus on as you got to do this or else we're going to be all over you?
Don't be so negative, Derek.
It's a reality.
It's a Toronto thing, and you know it.
Didn't you just hear my thing about joy and anything's possible and the start of a new year and the rebirth and all? And you know who it is, and he's one of my favorite people. I think it's Morgan Rielly. Morgan Rielly, who has been such a solid citizen for the Toronto Maple Leafs and had a really brilliant career, and he might be, when it's all said and done, he might be the leading point total defending defenseman in Maple Leaf history. He might have his jersey retired. Like, that's how, you know, good he's been. But with the scrutiny this team has had over the last few years with some of their shortcomings in the playoffs, he has largely missed some of those criticisms because it's always fallen to the offensive guys who haven't been able to score. And so I think it's Mo. And I don't even know, like, Mo makes $7.5 million now, which is like a third defenseman. And that's kind of what he is, right? Like, he's a good offensive defenseman. He'll probably get more points this year because he's going to be on the power play again with Marner gone. There won't be a 5-forward unit, but he's never been a great defensive defenseman. And he's still not a great defensive defenseman. But in Toronto, he doesn't have to be because they got McCabe and Tanev, who are as good a shutdown pair as there are in the league. But I think just sort of, if it doesn't go well, he's a guy that I think people might look to say, yeah, we don't have a number one defenseman. You were supposed to be it, which is not necessarily fair to him, but he was, and he's not, and maybe it goes there. But it'd be hard to, because he is such a good person, such a likable guy to deal with. Like, I don't ever even want to say anything bad about him, because I'm like, I like that guy, but that is the reality in Toronto.
Let's take a break. We'll come back.
I would have won that. We should have made that a game show, because I would have put down 44 as well. So I would have won the money.
And he was on my list. And not necessarily fair, but
I think there was a lot of people expected him to be. I think there were people expecting him to be moved this summer. I really do.
And the fact that he wasn't is part of the reason why. Oh, did you waive? Did you invoke your no trade? Did you balk it? Like, you know, it's all part of the backdrop. So if it doesn't go well, they're like, ah, oh, we should have got anyways.
You're getting negative. Well. You're getting negative.
Cruises and he gets 70 points again. I don't go negative. Not until next week.
Negative Mike on Toronto. I can see it.
I'm going to do some positivity breathing right now during the break, and we'll come back with more with Mike Johnson on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. Okay, do we feel cleansed now? Have we flushed the negativity?
I did the breathing exercises, the Wim Hof method, cold plunge, hold my breath for the 3 minutes, and now I'm centered and grounded. Let's
do
go.
Do you do a cold plunge?
I do have them at my place. That's where I stay.
I can't do it.
I love it. I love it.
It's not fun. What I've learned, so you can have cold plunges and they kind of range from like 3 degrees, we're talking about Celsius, to 8 degrees. And 8 is so much more comfortable than 3. Yeah, 3 hurts. 3 is like, I don't like this at all. And I've done it. And I'm like, I have a hard time hanging in there. But if I get like a nice 6, you jump out of that thing in the morning, Darren, it's like, it's a whole new world. You're ready to attack the day. But if you ever come to my cottage, you can jump in my cold tub.
I'll put a foot in and I'm like, I can't do it.
No, you just got to plunge and get in there.
No, that's the problem.
You just drop in. You don't ease in.
Yeah. No. Okay. No, you put your feet in, you sit down.
You know, since you moved to the desert, your blood has thinned and you're
soft. No. Let's get one thing straight. I've always been soft.
That's right. There's no transition to soft. Yeah, I'm consistently soft, okay? Let's not get this twisted.
Let's not blame the desert over that. You know Montreal really well. I like them. I've talked to a few people who counter my opinion on what to expect from the Canadiens. Where are you?
So I see both arguments. So there's a lot to like. They are talented. They are young. They are fast. They seem to have pretty good goaltending. They had really good goaltending last year. They acquired, I think, Boldu is going to be a nice addition up front, and Dobson will fit in nicely in the back end. They have a lot of good pieces, but they also have holes. And this is where the concern is. I think the chess pieces up front look better when they're listed 1 through 12, then they look when they go, that's a line, that's a line, that's a line. Like, it's hard for Marty St. Louis to, like, they tried the line A, Doc, Demidov for like the first week of camp. And like, yes, all are incredibly talented players, all with sort of question marks, whether experience or health or Kirby Doc, whatever.
Where those three were drafted, it makes them one of the best lines ever.
Right. One of the, you total the guy's draft position on a line. That might be the highest ever, right?
Yeah.
So, but they don't fit so naturally. And if you wanted your fourth, like their fourth line was going to be Anderson and Evans and Gallagher, that's good. You want your third line to be Newhook and Bolduc. And like, they all sort of make sense, but they don't necessarily fit. And like, that's a concern. First line, incredible. Slokowski, Suzuki, and Caulfield, no complaints. Defense is good. How they play the rest of their forwards, who are good names, how they come together matters. But the reason why I think they might be good is that they made the playoffs last year with abysmal defense at 5-on-5. Like, really, at times, the worst in the NHL. And it got fractionally better as the year went on, but never really got good. And they can't be worse in that regard. If they get just a little bit better, and I'm not asking for a top 10 team, get out of the bottom 10. Yeah. With everything else that you have going for you, then I think you have every reason to think that you can take steps on last year's performance where they snuck in the playoffs a bit surprisingly. Now, and that's coaching. Like, playing better defense shouldn't be that hard. There may be a few players in the NHL that really find trouble with it, but it shouldn't be that hard. It's sort of an awareness. It's a commitment. It's a focus and coaching. And I think there's no reason they can't do that and be better. And if they are, then they'll be better. They'll be better than they were last year.
Can line A play 5-on-5? Seriously.
I think he's sheltered now. I think he's got to be sheltered. Now, he talked about he's healthy and he's motivated. He's going to prove people wrong this year. He plays the game slowly, which is fine. He's got good hands, great hands to do it, and we know he can shoot. He's got to play with a play driving two-way centerman that can do a bit of everything and just let him do his thing. Not a lot of guys like that, and not a lot of guys on the Montreal Canadiens that way, right? So they don't want him to be a specialist, but he's probably going to be like a 10, 11 minute 5-on-5 guy. And then play in the power play a lot. And then he'll never play in the penalty kill, and he'll get out there in high leverage situations, trailing goals, needing goals, whatever it might be, late in periods, offensive zone starts, all that stuff. But John, it's a fair question, and one he has to answer if he wants us to think differently, because it doesn't look like he's there like he once was.
You talked about Toronto maybe being in a more of a fight for a playoff spot. I don't know who wants to win that division, because Tampa's never been out to win the division. They just worry about the playoffs. Florida's proven that the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. Toronto, the division might be up for grabs. The regular season.
My preseason, I have Tampa winning because my thought on Tampa, but if people are healthy, is that the one thing that's easier to run through 82 games is a great offense. And I think the fact that they score easier and their power play is so good, they can win 5-4, they can win 2-1. I see Toronto not winning many 5-4 games anymore, like a lot more closer games. Florida, we know their injury history. I just think Tampa, because of the way they got bounced in the first round, we forget how they were maybe the best team in the league or in the East, but the second half of last year, they were awesome. And their goal differential was massive. So they have the offense that will sustain fluctuations in their game. And Vasilevskiy was really good again last year. So I think the question marks about everyone else sort of defaults me to Tampa, that they would be my division favorite before the season starts.
We watched the Rangers lose at home last night. I know it's only one game. Sure. But like, what are the New York Rangers?
They are a team committed to being good now because of Panarin, because of Zibanejad, because of Shesterkin, because of Fox. That is probably not as good as they see themselves right now, or as good as they need to be. Now they bring in Mike Sullivan, old teammate of mine, old linemate of mine, to bring in structure and accountability. John, you saw them last year. There were times last year where it looked like they looked like a teenage team in their own end. Like, it was just so chaotic.
Mika Zibanejad last year was lost. He was lost, completely lost.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can't have that out of one of your top two centermen. You know, Trocheck is pretty diligent. He wants to do it, but there's games. I called a game where Zibanejad and Panarin were throwing pucks around. Like, even great players, you can't do that. You can't do that. So, but again, if we're going to go through the divisions, like, I think the Metro is probably the weakest division in the league. So I like Carolina. I like New Jersey. I don't know about Washington. I think they're going to take a huge step back just because it can't possibly be like last year. And the Rangers are right there too. They have good names. They got to figure out how to put it together to maximize what they have while also playing a brand of hockey that can allow them to win. That's Mike Sullivan's challenge. It might be a bit of a challenge. They were fine last night, but they didn't dominate. I think the story last night was more about Pittsburgh than about New York, because I think a lot of people have Pittsburgh being like one of the worst teams in the league, and they were better than the Rangers last night. And if Shelovs can be sort of consistent, then every team that has consistent goaltending has a chance to be decent in the standings.
Saw a great post last night. Imagine watching that Pittsburgh Ranger game and seeing Artur Shelovs shutting out a Ranger club that has JT Miller as his captain, and looking at the viewpoint of the Vancouver Canucks from a year ago. Like,
from? Yeah. Don't you remember the famous morning skate in the Nashville series? What was it, 2 years ago, where JT Miller came out in Artur Shelov's dress shirt and wore Artur Shelov's dress shirt in the morning skate? Because he thought it was such a bogus shirt. So, and then they went and sold a ton of those shirts in Vancouver as merchandise.
Yeah. Why wouldn't they? But one interesting thing about that, though, is the fact that they gave JT Miller the captain.
Oh.
I don't think it's an indictment of the other players, but it's sort of a message. What is JT Miller best known for? Like, he's obviously good, but like, he's fiery. He's emotional. He's passionate. You know, he's physical. And I think they're saying, I know he hasn't been here very long, again, second time around, but that's what we want to be our leader. Like, we need more of that from everyone. Mm-hmm. So it's more, not so much like, oh, JT Miller is the greatest of all time. It's like, but he plays at least with the sort of intangibles that we need more from our other best players. It was like, I think there's a bit of a message to the guys you mentioned, Banajad and Panarin and those other good players, saying, listen, you know, you might be better than that guy, but he plays with the fire we need from everyone. So bring more of that would be nice.
Does it make me a bad person that I didn't mind what Tampa did to wrap up the preseason?
Oh. Well played.
Sorry, I didn't finish the question.
Does it make me a bad person? Yes.
We can cut it there. So I think all hockey fans have a sort of a closet pleasure in watching that kind of stuff. Like, it's hilarious and it's funny, and it's funny until it's not, right? As long as, like, it's funny until someone gets hurt. When JJ Mosier is running guys from behind, and like, that could have broken a collarbone. When Carter Verhaeghe, like, and I said this, it wasn't so much the fights that bothered me. Those are what they're going to be, and you can take part in them, or if you're Aaron Ekblad, you have to take part in them, whatever. Like, those are generally somewhat agreed to. It was the crazy violent hits that led to the fights that were the more concerning part for me. But the idea of Tampa saying, listen, you had a guy, AJ Greer, taking swings at Brandon Hagel. Maybe it's related to Barkov, but he also got a bell rung by Ekblad. So maybe that toll was, you know, that was balanced out. And I don't have a problem with saying, if you want to do that to us, we're going to do that back to you. And if it's not this game, next game,
it's
not
a game of intimidation.
Like, I don't
it's
have
a sport
problem
of intimidation.
That. And I don't have a problem. And this is barbaric. And like, this is sort of old school, but like, sometimes the answer is not to go at the tough guy, to go at the not so tough guy. Don't go fight Ty Domi. Go make Mike Johnson uncomfortable, because like, you're not going to bother Ty. You're not going to bother AJ Greer, but you might bother Nico Mikkola. And you might bother Evan Rodriguez. And maybe you might not. Who knows? But like, that's how you respond. So I don't necessarily have a big problem with that. I mean, I played in some exhibition games. We don't have enough time. A Tampa, Florida game. We played in Fort Myers one time, Darren. We brought in a player named Kyle Frederick, I think his name was, who I'd never seen before. And he came in to play this game, and he was 6 foot
just
eight.
That game?
He's
just that game?
Just that game, he flew in from the Detroit Vipers or wherever our farm team was, played. You could check a stat line. I think he had 3 fights in 5 seconds and left. His skates didn't show up. He played. It didn't matter. He played in someone else's skates. It didn't matter. And Florida had like Peter Worrell and Paul Laws and Todd Simpson. And like, there was 300 fights in that game. It was ridiculous. It happens sometimes. But the other sort of more current underlying part of that is the fact that Florida has run through the league now for 3 years, being more comfortable playing games like that than anybody else, and being more willing to take games in that direction, not all the way there, but take games a little greasier, a little chippier, a little down in the alley, because they're better at it than everyone. Yeah. And I think teams that are competing with them now, especially in preseason, it's like standing up to the schoolyard bully. If I give you my lunch money on the first day, you're taking it every day. So I'm going to stand up to you the first day, and I might get my clock cleaned, but he's going to know he can't take it from me without me fighting back. And I think that's what Toronto is trying to do, and what Tampa is trying to do, and what Carolina is trying to do. Like, just Tampa had the chance to do it viscerally in a physical manner right after what they did it to them. But I think that's part of the reaction to Florida's dominance, is people saying, well, we may not beat them in the playoffs right now, but God damn, we're going to take it to them physically if we can, to try to stand up to the way they want to play.
Well, it is a copycat league, Mike. It is a copycat league. And, you know, my question was going to be, are we going to see a complete movement to bigger, tougher hockey again, despite, you know, the talents of, and the way the rules have changed in order to allow smaller players to play?
Problem is, you could go through the league and we'd probably be hard pressed to find 30 players that can play like that. Florida's got like 5 of them. They got Sam Bennett and Matt Tkachuk and Brad Marchand. Like, they got so many guys like that. And like, yeah, Tom Wilson's that, and Brady Tkachuk is that. But I can't have big guys who are tough who can't play. I want all the big guys who are tough who can play, but they're hard to come by. That's why they're so valuable.
But the schism now between regular season and playoffs and the style of hockey is the thing that is going to, you know, is so obvious, you know, and you know, it's a classic get in and win league now. Get into the playoffs, you know, you never know. You never know what's going to happen because we're going to change our whole philosophy when the playoffs start.
Yeah, build a team that thrives for 82 and then build a team that thrives in April and May. And they're different animals. And it's hard to do both. But
I mean, all you have to do is look at the Maple Leafs.
Yeah,
look at Winnipeg. I mean, you wonder, how is Winnipeg going to manage this?
Yeah, I'm worried about Winnipeg as well. They're my Western Conference Washington, just because everything went so well last year with the injuries they have. But I do wonder, John, and I have no idea, if the league lets it get any further away from resembling regular season hockey than it is now. In fact, I would wager they'd probably tighten it up. They probably, like, it can't be so different. The volume of infractions and interference and, like, all the stuff that they've done to change the game and change the way it's played and the players that thrive there, and then to not let it sort of be something really pretty close to that. I don't think the league lets it get much further away than it is now. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if they just rein it in a hair.
I can't believe anybody could intimidate Mike Johnson.
You know that's not true, but I appreciate the sarcasm.
No.
Now,
you're confident. You got swag.
My thing was, I knew what I was good at, but I also knew what I wasn't good at. And so that sometimes is as important to know what you can't do. And I'm not going to play a game I'm going to lose. So I'm not going to fight you because you're a better fighter than me. But this is the same way, like, you don't want to play a game of hockey with me because I'm better at hockey than you. That was what I would say on the ice. And like, you know, you wouldn't do a spelling bee with me because you lose because you're an idiot. But you can certainly punch me in the face if you can catch me. Good luck.
IDIOT.
Well done.
I thought MJ was talking directly to me there. You're an idiot.
I know, but I want to win. The only thing I could win was a spelling bee too. So, so you've got Washington and Winnipeg perhaps taking a step back,
regressing.
Regressing. Anybody that you think is going to surprise? Anybody that you look at with all the stuff that has gone on and, you know, people are going to say, whoa, we didn't see that coming.
So my one sort of obvious one might be Utah. Like, Utah has the chance, tough division. If Vemelka, the goalie that they can count on, then, or they get goaltending from whoever, like, they might be ready to take a step towards the playoffs. And I think even though they've been pretty good the last couple of years, I don't think they're associated with being good. I don't think people think about them as being sort of a quality team. They could do it. Anaheim is a real sexy sort of pick, but like, you look at their forwards and they got good forward. Leo Carlson to me is going to be a breakout star in the league this year. I think Cutter Gauthier is going to score 30 in his sleep because he shoots it about as well as anyone. So could Anaheim make another jump where they went from 50 to 70, 70 to 90? Joel Quenneville, maybe. But the real wild card, John, the real wild card, and I don't even know if I can say it out loud, but could Buffalo be better this year? Could Buffalo possibly be better this year?
Who's in goal?
This is my problem. This is with the injuries. This is the issue. But this was like, I was thinking about this when I'm like, well, maybe UPL can be solid there. And, you know, they have like 12 goalies under contract. So maybe one of them hits. Maybe Darren Millard's next in the line. I don't know. But like, at some point, they've got to be better than they have been.
Say the same thing about Detroit, right?
No.
I'm less bullish because what I fear for Detroit is that Detroit's floor is higher, but their ceiling might be lower. Like, if everything goes great for Detroit, I don't know how good they can be. You know, their defense is just okay. I don't know what do you think of John Gibson? You know him, you see him out there. He's been a great goalie for a long time. He had a better year last year. I don't know how good he's going to be. Like, I don't know if he's the answer.
Nobody knows. It's been so long since he's played on a competitive team. Nobody knows.
And since he's been really good, it's been like five years since he's been really good. And in fact, if you look at the goaltending numbers from even just last year, goaltending hasn't always been the problem for Detroit. They use a lot of them, but it's not, not always been the issue. It's been the other stuff going on there. They got a 68% penalty kill. That ain't going to cut it. So I'm just, I don't, Detroit probably gets 86 points, but I don't see them getting 96. And I think they're, whereas Buffalo could get 76, they might get 90. There's like a bigger fluctuation there.
Mr. Persian's math class, 68% was gold, but on a penalty kill, I guess it's not bad.
68% for you was gold.
Was gold. Again,
for you, that would be like a Kovalchuk curve right there. That is a massive curve.
Bullies in the schoolyard have had to change a strategy. Use that analogy. Now all the lunch money is on debit cards. It's tough to grab that stuff.
Can't steal it anymore.
Yeah.
Just grab it off the trays. It'll change. I'll take that and get fries and gravy.
Yeah. Tough time for the bullies these days. MJ, nice to chat with you.
Hold on. Okay. You're in good shape and you're talking about fries and gravy?
This is when I was 12, not when I'm 50. Yeah, no. Now it's like kale and quinoa. It's not nearly as fun. No.
How's the tennis game?
Tennis game was good this summer. I had a good recreational sports summer. Golf game was pretty good and the tennis game was pretty good. Yeah, it's no complaints. No complaints. And now that I qualify for 50 and over, like I'm the youngest person in that bracket, which helps, right? You have like those couple year windows, like an average golfer making the senior tour. Like he's not that good, but he's 50. So he's going to beat BJ Singh at 62. This is what I got for like a couple years.
You're Stephen Ames. You're like Stephen Ames.
Stephen Ames, who's cleaning up on the just until Tiger shows up, then it's over for Stephen. Yeah,
when I was younger, I always thought, God, those guys are old. I feel bad for them having to go to that other tour, that other level. and now that I'm sort of in that window, I'm like, this is the best thing ever.
Absolutely. You embrace it. Embrace the demographic bubble that we live in.
The age dominant Mike Johnson joining us on 100% Hockey. Thanks, buddy. Have a good year.
All right, guys. Great talking to you. Anytime. We'll do it again.
He had the do not disturb sign out on the door like a good veteran broadcaster doing a podcast in the hotel. And so many podcasts have been interrupted because of, hello. And good job by Mike Johnson. Housekeeping.
There are regular habits that you get into when you travel as much as we all have in our lives. The do not disturb sign, you turn the TV on right away, you check the shower. Those are the three things, not necessarily in that order.
I have the TV going all the time when Me I'm too. In the hotel room. And at home?
I sleep with the TV on.
At home, it's not on all the time. I don't know why I need it on for background noise when I'm just in the room.
Well, you may miss something on in the news cycle. You know, you may miss something.
It's Law and Order that's always on. Non-stop. MJ is one of those guys high on Anaheim. And that's the sexiest pick. He's right. In the National Hockey League right now of teams that are coming.
Anaheim and Utah, I think, are the two picks that people are waiting for. There's another list out there, though, Darren, and that is a list of teams we don't even talk about. Like, we don't mention them. Nashville? Like, we don't mention Nashville anymore. Yeah. I don't know what's happened, but Nashville, it's like Nashville's, you know, been relegated for some reason. I don't understand it.
I forced Detroit into that conversation. I feel they.
Well, no, but I think as you know, I think Detroit's. I think this has got to be a make or break year for the Red Wings, but Nashville and Calgary. I think Nashville and Calgary are two teams that you say well, you know, and maybe even throw the Islanders in there.
I was going to say Columbus, because they took such a big step.
I think Columbus. When Mike said he thinks the Rangers might be fighting for third, I think Columbus might be fighting for that third spot too.
You're right on the Islanders though.
The Islanders. I mean, what are the Islanders? What are they? I just don't know yet. And you know, it's a tough spot to put Matthew Darche in. You know, how can he change the personality, the culture of that team? You know, we talked about at the beginning of the show of changing the culture in Winnipeg. How do you change the culture and personality of a hockey team? in a summer. Difficult to do when you're not the coach or you're not a player, and that's what Matthew Darche has been assigned to do. So there's that list of teams that are just there. And we don't give any of those teams a chance to make the playoffs. We really don't. I don't think Calgary makes the playoffs. I don't think Nashville makes the playoffs. I don't think the Islanders make the playoffs.
What about Boston? That speaks really? A lot. But, it
yeah,
does.
No, I know. But, you know, so much of their strength has been what they have always had, which was great centermen.
Yeah. And they're right hoping now, it was a blip. And they'll be more competitive after the teardown in the second half. But I don't know.
Hampus Lindholm and Charlie McAvoy better stay healthy. Mm-hmm. Hampus Lindholm and Charlie McAvoy. And Jeremy Swayman's got to get back to being Jeremy Swayman again.
I got a back-to-back to start. It's going to be fun.
Yeah.
On the Strip tonight. Big brand new opening, you know, the theater of Vegas inside the Fortress and T-Mobile Arena. Brand new show coming your way. I can't wait to tell you all about it.
Here's the deal. A back-to-back for a broadcaster versus the back-to-back for a player. Seriously.
What do you think's harder? I thought we were debating that. Did you have a different opinion on that?
Oh, man, just take the money and run. Just go.
I walk by Mark Stone. I have a back-to-back, Stone.
I have a back-to-back, you know. We're not feeling sorry for you. You get paid to talk. Seriously.
I'm so excited. I love opening night on the Strip.
It'll be good.
You should come down sometime.
Yeah, maybe I should.
Vegas is open. People have this opinion that things are slow. Let's come down. Enjoy it.
Mitigating circumstances, yeah. Mr. Millard.
Come down, take advantage of it right now.
I get the same invite for people in Buffalo.
Oh, can't believe you haven't taken either one of
them. Yeah, I might go to Buffalo.
Massive game on Thursday, 14 games on Thursday night. So we'll be getting into it in full rhythm. And then we'll be back with everybody on Friday on 100% Hockey.
Hey, you know who's on Friday? Joe Bowen, who's going to go into his 700th year as the voice of the Maple Leafs, his last and 700th year. So. Mm-hmm.
And he'll drop a cup. You won't have to be listening super closely to catch a couple of the barbs that will fly.
And may not even need a microphone. So it's good.
good point. See if he can spell Mackinac.
I love Joe. I love Joe, though.
Yeah, good Unionville guy. Unionville Men's Hockey League.
Unionville Arms. Hoist a good one for Joe Bowen.
All right. Well, see Joe on Friday on 100% Hockey. Talk to you then.